Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Savannah, and I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join our telephone town hall. Tonight, Senate Democratic Leader Jay Costa of the 43rd District will be taking your calls live as he discusses the Senate Democrats' Affordability Action Plan, as well as some budget updates. Throughout this call, you will hear this reminder. If you have a question and would like to join the conversation, please press *3 on your keypad to participate. You can press *3 at any time to ask your question, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. So without further delay, please welcome Senator Jay Costa. Over to you, Senator.
Thanks, Sav, and good evening, everyone. As Sav mentioned, my name is Jay Costa, and I have the wonderful honor and privilege of serving as a senator for the 43rd District. And tonight, I want to, if I can, chat with all of you regarding where things stand with regard to our budget situation here in Pennsylvania, and then talk about our Senate Democratic Affordability Action Plan that we're working on in Harrisburg as we speak. Just by way of background, and give folks an update on where things are at. In February this year, Governor Shapiro laid out his budget proposal for the 26-27 year. And just to go over some of the highlights I want to chat with you about, I'll start with education spending. And I think it's important that folks recognize that the governor's proposed a couple things in the education space. Most notably is something called the Adequacy and Tax Equity Program, which will be the third year we're attempting to do that, with about $565 million being dedicated to that. That bunch of money goes to approximately 400 and some school districts, maybe even more, some numbers, some various numbers along those lines, based upon the needs of the district to bring those investments up to the level of funding that's necessary to get our kids. But in addition to that, he's proposed $50 million for the special education, another $50 billion for basic education increase, $7.5 million for other various programs along those lines, early learning programs. And one additional thing that he's done again this year is $75 million in annual school savings from additional charter cyber reform measures, which are very important. We think that'll build upon $175 million. So those investments that I talked about, coupled with these school savings for the cyber schools, is going to be very important going forward. One thing we're trying to also do is continue to use the teacher pipeline. This year we're going to do $35 million in the student teacher stipend, which provides up to about $10,000 to student teachers to assist them in expenses that cost them to become student teachers and ultimately make their way to teaching profession. That's a $10 million increase to $35 million. But other areas that I think are important are certainly going to be ones that we're going to continue to talk about, relate to resources that are making their way back into our homeowners' pocketbooks. A couple of things that we've done over the past couple of years, for example, last year we provided nearly $200 million worth of relief for Pennsylvanians under what's called the Working Pennsylvania Tax Credit Program. And that's the EITC program at the federal level that also recognizes that we need to do more on those lines. We're going to try to increase that, but at a minimum, we're going to provide that $200 million, again, as a tax credit to homeowners and families along those lines and folks who have worked along those lines. That's coupled with the Child Care and Dependent Care Tax Credit Program, which is another program that's put resources back into folks' pockets. Again, as we talked about the plan, we'll be talking more about that as well. But that's something we're going to try to grow along those lines. Gun violence prevention. We'll look at an increase. It'll be over $80 million. We're going to fund their program that I work with Representative Dan Franco on, a nonprofit security grant program. We're looking at doing an additional $10 million again this year. We proposed a $75 million for firefighters and also for EMS, which is a $30 million increase, to be able to continue to support those programs that are helpful along those lines. And then finally, one of the things we're talking about, and there's a number of others we can talk about, $15 raise and trying to continue to get there with a tip wage of $9. That conversation will continue. Governor's looking to add 380 new state police officers across Pennsylvania. I think four new classes that there's over the course of the 26-27 year. So one of the economic development programs the governor wants to put into place that we're discussing right now is $100 million in a program called Innovating PA 2.0. We did this about 15 years ago. You know, the first version of it, and that would primarily go for resources into the biotech and community-based programs along those lines, something we're very interested in. Last thing I will share with you is a $1 billion proposal the governor has over the next 4 years to try to create what's called a A critical infrastructure investment fund will allow us the opportunity to make investments, for example, in our school buildings, make investments in our housing communities to make certain that we're taking steps along those lines to do some of the things that are important. Continue to rattle on, there's a bunch of things. Just by way of background, in terms of where we stand financially, Governor's proposal now has been reduced a little bit to below under $53 billion. And last year we did a $50.2 billion budget. And our growth has been consistent and strong in terms of the revenue we're seeing right now. As I sit here today, we are $1 billion plus where we thought we might be. So last June, and actually should be November when we did our budget projections for the year, we were actually receiving $1 billion more than we projected, which helps our bottom line going forward. We continue to have between $2.5 to $3 billion in our surplus, and then we have an additional $7 billion that's sitting in our rainy day fund. All those resources will work together and help us get close to pass the budget by June 30th. So, Sav, I rambled on. How about we just go to some of the questions that we already have from folks that submitted online earlier?
Sure. As a reminder to folks who have just joined the call, thank you so much for joining us. If you have a question and you would like to participate in the conversation, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you as soon as possible. That's *3 on your keypad. We're going to start with some questions that we got online. Senator, you already talked about this a little bit, but can you talk a little bit about how long you expect the budget process to take this year? Last year, as you remember, it went well into November.
Yeah.
Number of organizations felt the pain of that. Can you talk about what we can expect this year?
I think folks can expect us to get a budget done by the end of June or first week of July. Last year, obviously, was an outlier in terms of the length of time that it took us, but we had a lot of comprehensive issues that we had to address. I don't see the same level of disagreement in many things, and I do think that we'll have something done by the end of June or first week of July. Just see that's how things have been playing out. We've had more conversations recently than we've had in the past. We're sharing information among leaders in the governor's office, determining where we want to go and narrowing the issues, and we're going to continue to be able to do that. That's why I'm very confident we'll be along those lines.
Great. You also had mentioned a little bit earlier about some education funding initiatives and some of the priorities for the Senate Democratic Caucus. Can you talk a little bit more about what you're trying to accomplish in the education space?
Yeah, so in education space, folks may remember there was a Commerce Court decision that said that our funding of basic education was deemed to be unconstitutional. We then put together a basic education funding commission that determined that we were about $6 billion short where we need to be to ensure that school districts have a baseline level of educating our kids or resources to educate our kids. So we spread that $6 billion increase over the course of like 7 years. We're not quite doing it over 7 years, we're probably more likely 9. The last 2 years, we've been appropriating about $550 to $570 million to the adequacy and tax equity school districts across Pennsylvania. And we're looking to be able to do that again. That's to ensure that our school districts are well positioned to be able to educate our kids at least a baseline level across all of our districts. So there's equity and fairness along those lines. But beyond that, we're looking to do the special education increase as well, as I mentioned, our early learning programs along those lines between Head Start and also the pre-K program. Those are some of the primary places that we'll go. In addition to that, we'll be doing some of the building upon last year's work in the cyber charter school space to ensure that we're going to add additional savings to our school districts. And cumulative effect this year would be about $250 million that school districts across Pennsylvania would be able to enjoy that benefit of that.
Wonderful. We're going to take one more question from an online submission. Again, if you would like to participate in the conversation, please press *3 on your keypad. Senator, someone online asked about what the budget will do for people with rare diseases. Is there anything you can say about that?
Yeah. In the past, we've had serious conversations about making investments in rare diseases, and I know we've passed legislation along those lines, and we'll continue to support efforts along those lines. As we look also investments in what I'll call biotech, for example, and other investments along those lines to help address rare disease situations with individuals and families. That's something we recognize as an important issue, and we have taken steps and we'll continue to be able to do that in Pennsylvania.
Wonderful. Well, with that, we're going to start taking calls. So we're going to start with Alex from Squirrel Hill. Alex, you are live and you can ask your question.
Hi, Senator Costa. This is Alex from Squirrel Hill. Thanks for taking my question. My question pertains to the bridges, the Charles Anderson Bridge and the Panther Hollow Bridge. These bridges are essential thoroughfares connecting Squirrel Hill to Oakland and Squirrel Hill to downtown. These bridges have been out of order for over a year. And I understand the City of Pittsburgh bridges, but with the City of Pittsburgh facing budget problems, I wondered if the state of Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, could step in and help the city, because there are dozens of deficient bridges that need help. When the bridge over the gully from Squirrel Hill to Regent Square fell down, it was repaired in 11 months, thanks to the good work of Governor Shapiro. Can you and Governor Shapiro do anything about this?
So thank you for that call. Very familiar with both bridges, and you're right. It was actually the federal government that really stepped in. The timing couldn't have been any better for us as it relates to the bridge, Forbes Avenue Bridge, that collapsed a couple years back, where they provided nearly all the federal money to be able to get that done. A little different right now. We're working closely with the city. I do believe that there are state resources that are part of both of those bridges that are being repaired. But I think the bulk of the resources are required to come from the City of Pittsburgh, and you're right. They're struggling financially, quite frankly, in terms of this space. But I do think that, it's on the things are coming together, I think, and I think it's going to be sooner than later that we'll experience, we'll see that opening of both those bridges. Along with that, as you know, this Commercial Street Bridge will be coming down next month, I guess. There'll be a period of time that will be closed, and folks will be rerouting through neighborhoods and districts. There's a significant amount of state money invested in that particular bridge. That's a major thoroughfare as well. And we just got, ideally it would have been nice to have both of those bridges open prior to several week delay we're going to have with the Commercial Street Bridge. But at the end of the day, folks are going to be able to deal with that. But we're trying to put more resources in the roads and bridges that make their way not only to the state for roads and bridges, but also make their way down to the municipalities across the state. We're hopeful to be able to add $300 million to state spending on roads and bridges. Going forward, coupling that with about $300 million in mass transit funding. We haven't reached agreement on that yet, and that's a priority for our Senate Democratic caucus, because we know how important transit is, and we're going to try to do the best we can to expedite that. So we'll try to help as best we can with the city. I know that we're invested in that in different aspects of it.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we're going to go to Eric in Wilkinsburg. Eric, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Yes, hi. This is Eric Sibley from Wilkinsburg. I'm interested to understand what the situation is for the next few years of the Trump administration, where it seems like they do not want to provide funding for Medicaid. I currently I'm an older worker. I'm no longer employed. I have to use our penny system for healthcare. Right now, my premiums are very affordable, but my concern is that there is not sufficient money from the federal government, being returned to the state of Pennsylvania to support the folks like myself who, need a bridge between the current situation we find ourselves in and Medicare when we become, able to take advantage of that program. Can you help me understand that?
Yeah, so what's going to happen is, effective January 1 of 2027, most important thing is going to be that there's going to be work requirements that are enhanced as it relates to the Medicaid program. And that's the concern. Their intent is, in my view, to have people not be eligible for the Medicaid program, thereby reducing costs. In Pennsylvania, we had a traditional Medicaid program. And then with the Obamacare, Affordable Care Act, we enhanced it through something called Medicaid expansion, which added about 750 to 800,000 people to a very modest level of health care insurance that has been beneficial. It helped us and helped families who were dealing with issues along those lines. We're going to be challenged with regard, folks are going to be challenged, and they're going to have to report information and have to prove that they are either working 20 hours a week, they're working volunteering 20 hours or in school for 20 hours. They're going to have to demonstrate that that's what they're doing. They're going to have to prove that to the Commonwealth, through the Department of Human Services, that they're doing that in order to remain on the Medicaid rules. And so the anticipation is that tens and tens of thousands of folks will not meet that criteria for a variety of different reasons, and they'll drop off the rules. But they drop off the rules, it doesn't mean they're not going to get sick anymore. What will happen is they'll present themselves. They won't be going to the doctors. They won't be getting treatment that they might need. They end up presenting themselves to emergency rooms, and emergency rooms are required to take care of them. And so it enhances the amount of money that would be there for that the hospital would have an uncompensated care. So it's a significant concern for us. That's just one aspect of the big, beautiful bill. The other part relates to the SNAP program that impacts low-income earners and families. The SNAP program, the same thing's happening. That's already in place right now. Work requirements have ultimately resulted in fewer people being eligible for the program, and that's problematic. And that, particularly as it relates to that age group from, 55 to 64, that age group now are required to provide 20 hours of work, 20 hours of school, or 20 hours of volunteer work. And the bureaucracy part of that is going to be enormous, and that's going to make a major impact on the Commonwealth agencies to be able to deal with that going forward. So it's very, very challenging along those lines, but we're trying to work through it and make it easier for folks to understand what's coming towards them, and because it's going to be very challenging for folks.
Thank you so much, Senator. As a reminder to everyone on the call, if you would like to go live and ask your question, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. Next, we're going to go to Anna from Penn Hills. Anna, you are live, and you can ask your question.
My question is, how do you plan on helping the city firemen? As it is right now, in at least they are sleeping on terrible bedding. They have to provide their own food. They're there for days and days on end. Around the country, they are providing sleep number beds so these guys can get good rest. I just kind of wonder what you're going to do to help the firemen. And the other question is, if we have so much in reserves, does that mean our taxes are not going to go up?
Well, that's a great question, the latter part. I don't anticipate any tax increases this year. I can pretty safely say to you that you're not going to see any tax increases. In fact, over the past 3 years, folks have seen probably about 7 different tax reductions and also, more resources going into their pockets. For example, people who are eligible for the Earned Income Tax Credit we talked about, which is the Working Pennsylvania Tax Credit Program, they saw a decrease in their taxes through the tax credit. Same thing with folks who avail themselves to the Child Care and Dependent Care Tax Credit Program. They, too, saw significant reductions in the taxes that they pay. That's just a couple of examples. That's just 3 examples along those lines. There's several others. To answer your question about what the governor's proposed, he's proposed a $37 million fire company and emergency medical services program that will allow for the ability to purchase equipment, to do additional training facility upgrades, and things of that nature. Also, a new $30 million competitive grant program where they will be able to, apply for a grant program to do a variety of different things. Purchase new equipment vehicles, and as I think folks know, it's incredible, but every fire truck you see probably costs $1 million to put together between the truck and all the things that are needed. It's crazy. But also, again, training and recruitment efforts to be able to provide tools along those lines with resources and retention. I mentioned facility improvement and also helping our fire departments with debt reductions. When they have to go buy a new fire truck, and particularly with volunteer folks, volunteer companies, they really have to go and raise a lot of money, and it's difficult through bake sales and the like. We already provide $50 million across the state to our fire companies, volunteer and EMS folks. But it's not enough when you have to go buy a truck that costs almost upwards to $1 million. So we're trying to do some of those other things and trying to also do operational expenses as well. There's also part of a cancer screening fund to help elevate cancer risk, dealing with cancer risk for firefighters. As you know, we have a cancer presumption law now in Pennsylvania that's been very helpful to them, and we're dealing with that. But even going further to generate ways in which we can have earlier detection, earlier treatment along those lines. And then finally, along the municipal part, looking to be able to do some additional collaborations between departments, between paid and volunteer, maybe encourage, consolidation and maybe some other volunteer agencies, because each agency, in many respects, are strapped for workers. So it's a long list of things that the governor's proposed that we're working on. We hope to be able to get all them or most of them across the finish line through the negotiation process here in Harrisburg this month.
Speaking of the negotiation process, Senator, there was a question that came in online. Someone asked, how can I be a part of the democratic process?
Well, I think one way to do that is, you know, communicating with your elected leaders, your elected officials, your House member and your Senate member, and speaking with them and stressing to them what your priorities might be or what you think the community priorities need to be along those lines. I think that's probably the best way to be able to be a part of that process. So not only that, reach out to surrounding areas as well, being part of that conversation. The last, we were in Harrisburg this week. I was able to get home just in time to do this program here in Forest Hills. I can tell you that there is a significant number of groups that are coming to Harrisburg. Literally hundreds and hundreds of people are there as part of advocacy groups. So you may want to participate with an advocacy group as well if there's a particular interest that you have in legislation and enhancing funding for different programs. So it was incredible how many people were there. And that's part of the democratic process, democracy. And it's great to see all those people there doing the advocacy work. So those are a couple of ways in which they can participate in the process.
That sounds great. Next, we're going to go to Joan in Regent Square. Joan, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator, I wanted to ask, I recall a couple of years ago that there was a court ruling that the way that Pennsylvania funded school districts was basically something to the equivalent of just not equitable. I'm very concerned that we're doing all of this through real estate taxes. I'm 77 years old. I live alone. I'm now on a fixed income. I have no children. I have no grandchildren. I mean, no one in my family has ever used any of the school districts in Pennsylvania. And I'm being whopped, even with the Homestead Act, on the school taxes. Is there any thought to a more equitable way of doing the funding of schools? Because if somebody's in my house, they would pay the same amount as I am, even if there were two people who had an income and two kids using the school. And it's just basically not fair.
So I wish that we had more discussions about how we are funding our schools. It's not the best way that we can be raising revenue along those lines. Unfortunately, we've not had the will to change that, to incorporate what folks would have probably looked to maybe an earned income tax or a personal income tax or a sales tax increase, taking all the money from the gaming money that we do right now, which is almost $1 billion, putting some together, some combination that changes the way we do it, not have it based on property taxes. There's simply not the will to do that right now. I will tell you that there are programs for individuals like yourself. You know, we have the property tax and rent rebate program, which we significantly increased the income limits and also the amounts. I think 3 years ago, and those amounts continue to hold. So that's probably one of the most significant things. We're also trying, if you live in Pittsburgh, I'm not sure where you live at, but in Pittsburgh, we're trying to put into place what's called the LOOP program, long-term owner-occupied program, which sort of essentially freezes property taxes for long-term owner-occupied properties, so that when all the property assessments around you go up because people are paying enormous amounts of money for money, that individual homeowner in that area would not be impacted in the same degree until such time as the house is sold. So we're trying some of those things to be able to help folks, but the most significant thing we have right now is the property tax and rent rebate program, as well as, I mentioned, the gaming money that provides nearly $1 billion to property tax homeowners and is a property tax relief. So you may not see it in yourself because it's on your tax bill. And depending on what district you live in, it varies in terms of how much. It could be anywhere from $250 to $400 or $500 tax relief that's there. So these are some of the things we're doing, but clearly I think we have to have a conversation about shifting the burden of property owners as it relates to the property taxes to some other way in which we could fund schools.
Thank you so much, Senator. As a reminder to everyone listening, if you would like to ask your question, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. Next, we are going to Brenda. Brenda, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, my name is Brenda. I'm in the Hill District of Pittsburgh, and I have how you doing? My concerns is with the housing. The first AMI. And I was told by Marimba Milan, so I'm trying to get an understanding, why is the AMI not helpful to us in 2026? My own personal experience, me and my daughter and my grandson almost died from gas poisoning because the sewage was backed up. And the landlord would not fix it. And we had different people coming every time to look at it. So I called Natasha Mays, and she said she's sorry she couldn't help us because our landlord was American. It was from New York. And she said there's seniors going through the same thing, and they can't regulate them. So with this first question is, how do we better regulate or stop allowing for outside landlords to come to buy the properties and have fix them? They charge us all this money, and then they never fix it properly. The house ended up blowing up. It's 5434 Kincaid. You can look it up, 15206. We got out of there just in time. My other experience is the developers. I'm on Bedford, McCormick and Barron. My rent is $1,533 for a two-bedroom. They go up every year. All the materials are cheap in there. There's people who smoke marijuana. I don't know if they, and the landlord said they ain't nothing they could do about it but give them letters. I have allergies. My neighbor, she's 73. She has asthma. I mean, the weed wastes us about our sleep. So I was like, is there a way, if medicinal is legal, is there a way they can just build communities just for people who smoke marijuana?
Well, you raised some very good questions. Thank you very much. I think a couple of things. One, I don't know whether we can have medical marijuana communities. I don't think we can do that. It just doesn't sound like folks would have, unless they voluntarily all want to live in the same area, same housing building, whatever. With regard to landlords, you're right. I think one of the problems is that we have a whole lot of folks coming in, these private equity firms coming in and buying up properties, and then putting little or no work into them and then charging exorbitant rates, something we're very much concerned about. I've been working very hard to be able to provide affordable housing projects here in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. We've done some here in Forest Hills. This last year, we're doing one in Hazelwood right now, second one in Hazelwood. We're hoping to do a third one on 2nd Avenue. We've done McKees Rocks. All around the county, we're putting these investments in these LIHTC deals, and they're helpful. And then we do have sort of control over what can be done there. Because the state's involved through PHFA, which is the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency. So I think there's more work that can be done along those lines. And with regard to the average, median income, I think that I'm not quite sure how it's being utilized in your particular case, but I do think that's one of the variables that we look at to determine who's eligible to do what. Thank you for that question.
Thank you, Senator. Charles online had a question. He asked, what are you doing about the increasing cost of everything, from water to electricity to gas and tariffs? How are you trying to get a hold of prices going out of people's budgets?
So that's a great question. That leads us to our conversation about our Senate Democratic Affordability Plan, which we think is something that we need to take action on. And we consistently are trying to encourage our Senate Democratic colleagues to join us along those lines. And I do think that we're going to continue working on that. What are we talking about when we talk about an affordability plan? Yeah, we're talking about, first and foremost, increase the minimum wage. You'd be surprised how many people are there that do not, who are not, are making minimum wage, and they just can't simply make things work, right? And I think that's what we're struggling with right now. So we've got to take the steps to increase our minimum wage. We are the only state around the country, around our region, that doesn't have a higher minimum wage. West Virginia is the lowest among all of us, and I think they're close to $9 an hour. So we have a lot of work to do. Our house has passed more than five times past minimum wage bill. We're hoping to be able to do something, getting to 15 over maybe a 3 or 6 year period. Let's go to $11, $13, $15. Let's have it adjusted to cost of living increases as well, so that people are earning a good wage. And that's something I think is reasonable people feel comfortable about. That's probably the most significant thing. We're also taking steps to be able to, the electricity rates. I know a lot of folks are starting to experience increase in rates in electricity. I know, for example, Duquesne Light on June 1st just went up, I think, by a little less than about 1.5% increase. It doesn't sound like a lot, but, it's the cumulative effect of rate increases that concern a lot of folks. So we're trying to take steps to be able to put limitations on what they'll be able to do going forward when they ask rates. Westmoreland County, for example, saw experience a 10% increase in their electric rates. So there's a conversation that needs to be had along those lines. healthcare costs is another area where we're trying to take steps to ensure that folks have access to healthcare at low cost. You know, the Affordable Care or the One Big Beautiful Bill decimated in many respects with the elimination of the subsidies that came through the Affordable Care Act. Over 80,000 people in Pennsylvania no longer have access to health care through the PENNY program, which is the Pennsylvania's marketplace for health care. It's incredible that 80,000 people, as we sit here today, no longer have health care. And it's going to drive up family costs along those lines. It also increases the cost. That's just the folks who don't have the health care. There's a significant number that experience significant increases in the premiums through the marketplace program through PENNY. So those are just some of the things that we're working on. There's not much we can do in terms of gas prices. As they in my area, they reached an all-time high, I think, of $4.99 lately. I think they're ratcheting back down a little bit. But that's something that really is being driven by access to oil. And I know that there's conversation maybe about freezing the gas tax in Pennsylvania, which would be $1 billion. Even if we did it for 6 months, that would take $1 billion out of our road and bridges funding that we use right now. And the problem would be, in my view, as we saw in the past, the oil companies don't reduce the gases. So we eliminate, or we put a freeze on the gas tax. We don't see the reduction of 48 or 58 cents at the pump. And then we lose all that money in the revenue side of the equation. So these are some of the things that that we're dealing with, and it's going to be difficult for us to, you know, figure out what needs to be done. We're pursuing these measures, but unfortunately, our Republican colleagues in the Senate simply don't want to take these matters up.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Calvin in Penn Hills. Calvin, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call for this town hall meeting.
Yep.
I am 100% disabled Air Force veteran. I reside in Penn Hills. My question is, I'm curious to know what is being done about property tax exemption for Allegheny County as it is in other states and other localities.
I know that, I'm not sure just for Allegheny County, but there have been conversations about expanding the property tax exemption for our veterans. Particularly disabled veterans, to make it a larger portion of an exemption, if I'm not mistaken. That's something that's been proposed a couple of times, and we're very supportive of it for that. An exemption for Allegheny County, there's not a whole lot of conversation, a specific one broadly for everyone that I'm aware of. There is talk about potentially maybe doing a reassessment. That's a decision that the county will make, and I think it may still be tied up in the courts as to whether that's being enforced. My view is, if we're going to get on a reassessment path, that all counties, the whole state, they need to do it to ensure that it's fair and equitable to everyone else, so that we don't have, you know, people who are bordering Allegheny County, whenever Beaver, Butler, Westmoreland, or Washington, they don't do an assessment, a reassessment, that it's an unfair advantage that they have over us. So my preference will be that we do it all the statewide. And then we continue to do it every so many years, so it doesn't, so it remains fair. The problem right now, as I see it, is the cost associated with doing a reassessment, and upwards of like $30 to $40 million to do another reassessment. When we did it back in, I think, 2012, which the last one was done, I believe, it cost in excess of $20 million. So that's the biggest concern right now. But on the exemption side for disabled veterans, I think is what you're asking, we'll continue to try to expand that going forward.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Cheyenne in Penn Hills. Cheyenne, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, Senator Acosta. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering how you plan on voting if the National Defense Authorization Act containing Section 224 comes across your desk.
But I'm not sure. What is the national? I'm not quite familiar with what bill that is. What is it called again?
The National Defense Authorization Act, containing Section 224, the United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperative.
I'm not sure that's here in the state Senate. It may be something that's in Washington and not here in Pennsylvania. I'm not sure there's a – I'm sorry?
No, I thought you were wrapping up. Go ahead, Senator.
No, I'm not familiar with any of that conversation even happening in Harrisburg right now. I'm not quite sure if that's – if there's a particular piece of legislation that's related to that, I'd be happy to consider what you're talking about.
While we have you, can we hear a little bit? Somebody asked a question online pertaining to drop boxes and whether you support the continued use of drop boxes in our election system.
Yes, very much so. I think drop boxes are an important part of our election process. I think it allows people the opportunity participate without having get in the car and drive downtown, for example. So regional drop boxes are something I do support.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to go to Rebecca in North Braddock. Rebecca, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Okay. Hey. Hi. How are you all?
Nice. Good, thanks.
Good. Okay. Now, this had been mentioned already. I was calling about how they fund the schools. I was listening to the beginning of this conversation, and you had said about all the money that has been afforded to us for school funding, which was great. Number one, the funding the schools through the real estate taxes, it's just an unfair system. Braddock, North Braddock, Wilkinsburg, et cetera, our kids all have to go elsewhere. They're all displaced neighborhoods. You know, the kids are all displaced out of their own neighborhood. It just isn't, we all know this does not work. It just isn't. It just isn't fair to the kids to do it that way. But that's the way you do it. And like the woman before us and the gentleman who just spoke, I am a senior citizen. When we retired 10 years ago, pensions were pretty good. Well, not so much anymore. And I have to pay full price for everything. I'm not complaining, but that is the way it is. The exemption, all he's talking about with real estate taxes is the Homestead Act, exemptions, et cetera. I don't understand why a regular person can't be exempt after you pay for your house, kids are grown and gone. Why can't we just not pay it anymore? Or I think the whole thing itself, quite frankly, does not work right. We have a lot of money coming in with the marijuana sales, gaming revenues. Not quite sure where that's all going to, but, you know, that might be an idea before they start all these different, you know, like the gaming, et cetera. Maybe that should have been put in place, you know, before that.
I just want to say
one thing. Okay, we pay full everything, utilities. We get a break on nothing. By the time everything is paid for, I qualify for everything. We just have a couple bucks left. And, you know, with working 46 years and 50 years, it's just too much. So I don't understand why it just has to be gone, that whole real estate tax thing. Okay, I'm done.
Well, that's okay. And I hear the frustration. I think we've heard it a couple times on this evening's call-in program. And I hear it when I'm speaking to folks in the community. We're trying to address affordability measures, doing a variety of different ways, helping families through the Earned Income Tax Credit program, through the Child Care Dependent program. Those are ways in which people are seeing their bottom line pocketbook impacted in savings along those lines. There's more we need to do. We do have the senior property tax and rent rebate program that I think is helpful, but it's not enough. You mentioned the gaming revenue. Again, as I mentioned earlier, nearly $1 billion gets distributed to every homeowner across Pennsylvania for their primary residence. That's a significant savings along those lines. And that's coupled, as I mentioned, with the property tax and rent rebate program. So there's more we can do. I think we have to change the way we fund our schools. I don't disagree with that. But the problem has been we tried three or four different times in the last 30 or 40 years where we had voter initiatives, folks don't want to pay property taxes, but at the same time, they don't want to see an increase in the sales tax, expanding the utilization of the sales tax to other items like clothing and food and other types of exemptions that exist already. They don't want to see the personal income tax go up. They don't want to see other, you know, taxes they may have to pay go up. So at the end of the day, we eliminate school property taxes. We're talking about $7 or $8 billion of lost revenue. So we have to find a replacement for it. And that's where the challenge comes in. And then once we find the replacement for it, then it becomes a question, again, of the distribution of our property taxes. how do we equitably distribute them to school districts across Pennsylvania? So as it relates to your point about not paying the property taxes after a certain period of time, we have been trying to do some senior property tax freezes. I mentioned the LOOP program in the city of Pittsburgh is one way we're going to try to do that, work into there for folks with certain income limits applicable to it. But the more people that don't pay the property tax means the people who are after paying it are paying more. And that's why we're trying to keep it as equitable as possible. So I think there will be coming another conversation about property taxes, property tax relief, but at the end of the day, it's a voter referendum, and voters have voted it down on three occasions already, shifting it from property taxes to other types of form of revenue.
Thank you so much, Senator. We still have a decent amount of time left. If anyone online would like to ask their question still, you can press *3 on your keypad, and we will get to you when we can. Next, we are going to Mariah in Regent Square. Mariah, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, Senator. How are you doing?
Hi. Well, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Yeah, my name is Mariah Faith from Regent Square. I wanted to specifically ask you about Black-owned businesses and if there are grants for that, how much money that would pertain, and how can Black-owned businesses go about getting those grants?
So we, in the past, and I believe the governor may recommend it again, we have grant programs that assist business owners in disadvantaged communities, and it's through the Department of Community and Economic Development. So I think we can try to reach out there. We started the program under the when we were dealing with COVID situation, where we had the large businesses were able to get these loans that were forgiven, but a lot of small businesses, particularly minority-owned businesses, weren't able to access them, and it became a problem. So we created the disadvantaged community business program, and that continues to be available, I believe, and I think we're going to try to fund it again this year. It's a function of what a business plan looks like or what the needs might be, but you would apply, I believe, to DC, Department of Community Economic Development. And I think if you want to give the office a call tomorrow or Friday, we can have folks, you know, follow up with you on explaining exactly what the nature of that program is. And to what degree it still exists.
No, we will go through and make sure that everyone has the phone number for the office at the end of the call, so everyone will get that information. Next, we are going to go to Raymond in Bloomfield. Raymond, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi. Hi, Senator Cox. Thanks so much for taking my call. So I'm a pharmacist. I worked at a local independent pharmacy in the Highland Park area of Scandinavian Drug that closed last year. So the pharmacy had been around for like over 100 years and couldn't survive due to the recent, on the whole scope of things, like the last, you know, 10, 20 years, I guess, terrorization that PBMs kind of inflict on reimbursement rates. So I was wondering what all is kind of in the works there. I know that I've heard of some legislation that would pop up, but I never really know where that ends up going or how realistic do you see that being, like real PBM reform, either in the state level, either through the state or at the federal level. I guess you couldn't speak to this much, but just what were your thoughts on that? And if it was at the federal level, it would, I guess, inevitably trickle down to how the state like carries it out. So how would you see that going? Like,
I know that our local state representative, Jessica Benham, did a tremendous job leading that effort with respect to trying to rein in the PBMs and assisting our community pharmacists and pharmacies. And while we didn't get, as far as we would like to have gone, there is a little bit of conversation about further PBM reforms that will be beneficial to our community pharmacies and pharmacists. So, I don't anticipate anything's going to be done this month here in Harrisburg, but the conversation does continue to be able to further rein in and also remove the tremendous power the PBMs have as it relates to their interactions with, you know, pharmaceutical companies and also with pharmacies. So I think we're going to continue to work on that, but there's nothing that's pressing right now that I can point to that would give relief, at least in the short term.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to go to Kathy in Church Hill. Kathy, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Thank you for taking my question, Senator. My question is, where do you stand on the issue of local control by borough councils, townships, municipalities when it comes to zoning, permitting approval, of conditional use issues, land use issues, especially regarding AI data centers? And I'm asking this because I've heard that the governor is promoting a fast track decision making that would bypass local authority. And I would like to add to this that you mentioned about the rise of electric bills throughout the country where AI data centers are located. People are seeing their electric bills skyrocket. And finally, where do you stand on a statewide moratorium regarding more AI data centers? Thank you very much.
So let me start with the question about local control. I do believe local governments should continue to maintain control in zoning decision matters. And I do believe that that's essential in terms of being able to control what's taking place in those communities. As it relates to the governor's position, I think that he's put forth the GRID program. There are many elements to the GRID program. One that's most important to me is that there is a requirement in the GRID program that he's proposed that, in fact, these folks who want to get a permit to operate a data center need to be getting certain approvals, indicating that they're taking steps to be able to be communicating with local governments, that there be openness and transparency associated with that as well. And that's really an important aspect of what needs to be part of that conversation. That's my view. And I think that's a big part of what he's trying to achieve. Beyond that, one of the most important notable things is that if you want to get, a certification for a data center, that you got to bring your own power. And that means that the taxpayers should not be bearing the cost of the data center deployment and the data center utilization of electricity. So they're required, through the programming that they submit for the permitting, to demonstrate that that's what they're going to do. That's important because that will then not have the burden of a data center being shifted to all ratepayers. And so they got to bring their own electricity. And I think that's significant. As I mentioned to you, they need to talk about through this process, openness and transparency with working with our local municipalities. That's going to be a big thing as well. I'm trying to remember some of the other elements. Oh, also talking about the standards that will be put into place as it relates to water usage of all those lines and a variety of other potential standards as it relates to pollution, but the noise levels that would be associated with that. So those are two things that they'll be adopting standards they need to meet as it relates to noise, lighting, and also air quality. Also, emergency management considerations need to be part of it. Aesthetics need to be part of it. And also there needs to be required again before permitting, there would need to be a community benefits agreement that's put into place where the data center folks would need to make a commitment to make investment in community benefits for that particular community that they may be residing in, adjacent communities as well that also have that impact. So those are some of the things that the governor is talking about. But while they're, I think he is looking at accelerating the process by which to do that, but at the same time, all these conditions need to be met before they do something along those lines. I mean, data centers, I think, the number is starting to slow a little bit because communities are pushing back to some degree. So that's what's going to be important. We do have an issue with regard to electricity generation in Pennsylvania. We have to take steps to, even if we don't do any data centers going forward, we're going to have an electric generation issue with PJM and the cost of their having to pay for electricity because it's becoming scarce as we go in the out years. And we don't want to be having ourselves faced with these brownouts that could occur, that are occurring in other states because they're not producing enough electricity. And that's really important to us here in Pennsylvania. We got to take steps to address that. With regard to a moratorium, we're not going to see a moratorium. There's no interest in putting it on the Senate floor for any type of a vote going forward. So there are people who support that. But I don't see any way in heck that it's going to be put on the Senate floor because some of the work, we don't control the Senate floor calendar, and that's one of the reasons why I think you won't see it. But I can tell you that it's a major issue that we're being discussing in Harrisburg, and the most important part of that to me is the ratepayers not having to pay for the electric generation that they're going to be able to, they need to bring to the data centers.
Topic. Do you want to talk a little bit about the jobs and economic development angle of the governor's grid plan?
Well, yeah, the grid plan, I think, talks a little bit about how we're going to grow the number of jobs and ensure that they're going to bring X number of jobs. Again, part of the application process to be able to be successful, they will need to demonstrate that they're going to bring significant number of jobs to the region. And they will need to be construction, on the construction side, for example, they will need to be able to bring at least 200 prevailing wage jobs. And then also jobs paying at least 125% of the average statewide wage. And as I mentioned also, the community benefits agreement as well. So there's job creation part to this as well. But the other thing is, I mean, the creating the energy generators are going to be the big thing. We've really got to talk about that going forward. Because, you know, if we don't do anything at all, we're going to find ourselves in a very difficult position in a few short years. And that's something we need to work on. So regardless of what we do in on data centers, again, we are facing an electric generation issue going forward that is only being exacerbated if we don't do anything because of data centers. But if you want to get a data center in Pennsylvania, you need to go through all these, you're going to need to meet all these conditions. That's what the governor's proposed. That's what I support. And I will tell you that, unfortunately, we can't get our Republicans to get their arms around any of these measures to be able to support any of these, to put these guardrails in place, which I think are essential.
Thank you so much, Senator. We have time for a couple more questions. So next we are going to go to Rhonda in Penn Hills. Rhonda, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, Senator. Thank you for taking my call, and I'll be brief because maybe other people.
Sure.
But I've been living in Penn Hills for over 30 years. The sewer bill, they're always saying it's going to go down. We pay extra for this and that. That always seemed to rise. Now it's the water. In my understanding, are the residents going to be paying for the change of the pipe to their house, to the main, or how is that going to work? Because I just hear different versions of it, but I know they ask for people to take pictures of your piping. You know what I mean? Like the city replaced all the ground pipes for lead-based paint, I guess, or lead or in the pipes. What are the plans for Penn Hills? Are we paying for it, the residents, or is it?
Well, it depends. I'm not quite sure. I think what you're referring to is Wolf Penn Water Authority, which includes Penn Hills. And I know that they have a program. I think they may be replacing lead lines. I'm not certain. And I do think that it's in conjunction with Wolf Penn Water Authority. I'm not sure exactly the appropriate who would pay for it. But if it's the private lateral line, the line from your home to the main line is the homeowner's responsibility. But I know in the city of Pittsburgh, they've received loans and grants from PennVest that they're helping to do tens of thousands of homes in Pittsburgh at no cost to the ratepayer, so, or to the homeowner. So I'm not quite positive what Wolf Penn is doing, but I'll try to find out and get an answer for you.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we're going to Joni in Regent Square. Joni, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm well, Joni. How are you doing?
Okay. I want to know what you guys are doing about the to prevent the abuses of the people in the detention, the detention centers.
So there have been some conversations, Joni. Thank you for the question. There have been some questions with regard to working with local governments to limit the opportunity for any additional ICE centers in Pennsylvania. A couple have been proposed across the state. And then that's one of the things that we're doing. Unfortunately, we don't have the ability to go in there, nor does our attorney general or our state police have the ability to go in there and assess what's happening there. I know there have been potentially the Human Service agencies are looking to be part of that conversation, but that hasn't happened. But we're trying to limit what we have and not have any more grow these detention centers. I know in Berks County there were some pretty horrendous conditions that took place there, and then also the isolation with the children in that regard. So those are some of the things that we're continuing to work on and trying to find ways that we can get through a crack to be able to provide some oversight in terms of what's being done. But that's just a very frustrating part right now, Joni, we're dealing with. And
And I think it's something that, you know, we're just trying to do our best to be able to address it.
Thank you so much, Senator. Next, we are going to Christina. Christina, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, I'm Christina from Mount Washington. I had two questions. The first was, how would the passage of PA Senate Bill 998 improve affordability for prospective and current nursing students at various levels of degree seeking?
I know that that bill's been introduced, I think, by my colleague, Senator Collette, and I think Senator Rosemary Bryan up in Northeast. I'm not quite sure whether or not it's poised to be able to be passed anytime soon. I'm not certain about that. I guess check the status of that. But I do think it's something that there's a lot of interest in terms of working to ensure that we're taking steps to provide resources to help folks expand their capacity to be able to provide services, particularly in nursing education. You know, there's a lot of talk about a number of other bills, but we're trying to figure that status out.
Thank you. And then the second question was, what role do you think nurses and advanced practice nurses play in improving affordability of healthcare for PA residents?
I think they play a major role. I think it's important that we go along those lines. I mean, I know we've had a conversation about, you know, full practice authority for our nurse practitioners. My daughter's a nurse practitioner. And I think we need to take steps along those lines to be able to ensure that. We've had different versions as it related to regional authority, and having the ability to have a nurse practitioner, particularly in rural Pennsylvania, not having to have a doctor overseeing everything that they do and everything that's being done, I think makes it easier for folks to have access to more and more healthcare professionals in the community, and I think that's what's essential as we go forward. So I do know that. And to go back and looking at the, you mentioned about 998, I think it was, as you mentioned. I mean, we already passed that, and that was one of the co-sponsors and supporters of it as well. And I do think that, but I'm not quite sure if it's on its way back to us for a concurrence vote or not, but I do know that we dealt with it, and it's something that makes a lot of sense for us.
We're going to take one last question before we sign off, and we're going to go to Teresa in Greenfield. Teresa, you are live, and you can ask your question.
Hi, Senator. This is Teresa. I have a question. What conversations, if any, are there around public-private partnerships with institutional capital in terms of affordability and critical infrastructure improvements for Pennsylvania?
So I know that we have the private-public partnerships at the state level. There are conversations. I think there's legislation that's been introduced or maybe moving in the House that would address public-private partnerships at the local level and enhancing, encouraging more of that to take place across the state. So that, I know there's conversation along those lines, and I think it makes sense for us to be able to think about that. In my view, I think the three P's have been helpful in some areas with regard to at the state level. We've done some good things there. We also have done some questionable things there. So I do think that we need to take a look at that, and something I think is done right could be valuable, and I think help us in terms of creating the appropriate level of infrastructure that we need. But then you've got to couple that, though, with the resources to make those investments on the public side. And we need to make we need to create a pool of money to be able to do something like that. I mentioned at the outset the governor's proposed a $1 billion critical infrastructure fund that I think will be very helpful, spreading out over 4 years, $250 million a year. And to us, it makes a lot of sense. To me, it makes a lot of sense in that, you know, we have the state's role and the public side of the equation to partner with private folks to be able to do projects in our area, things that need to be done, so that's the state. So, you know, I think we need to do it, but, again, it comes back to making sure we have the public resources to do that investment. That's what's going to be important.
Well, that brings us to the end of our time, Senator. Do you want to give us any closing remarks?
I just want to say thanks, everybody, for participating. We've got a great audience tonight, several hundred people. We're at high water mark with like 700 folks. I appreciate folks taking the time to spend time with us and answer as many questions as we can. If I, folks who have not had their questions answered, we'll get, you know, hang on the line and we'll get some questions back to you or answers back to you. My hope is to, you know, continue to communicate with folks through this budget process in a variety of different ways, certainly through emails that people write to us on. Or even, you know, through social media, communicating with folks about what's being done. And this will be an important month for us. I hope to have the budget done by end of June or first week of July, so we're not causing any problems for either our school districts or our nonprofits or our providers
that they don't have to worry about, you know, when their money's going to come in to continue to provide the services they provide. So we've got a lot of work cut out for us. We have a lot of decisions we have to make, tough decisions. You know, the biggest is going to come down to what role does the rainy day fund play in our overall budget process? To what degree are we going to utilize a portion of that? That's going to be the question. And how much money are we planning on spending and how we're going to spend it? So I enjoyed our conversation, and I look forward to maybe a conversation like this in the future. And I want to say thank you for everybody for participating.
Thank you so much, Senator Costa. If you did not have a chance to get your question answered, you can stay on the line and you'll be able to leave a message for us, or you can call the office tomorrow at 412-241-6690. You can also visit senatorcosta.com and submit your comment there. Thank you to everyone who participated, and have a great evening. Thank you so much.